But it's really important that we trust that this will change and that hopefully we will make something better from it.
I can't think of a better way to end this program. I mean, just so beautiful. Thank you for that. I want to thank my incredible guests for joining us, Nicole Gustafson and Katie Laurie, student support counselors at Gateway Technical College. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Until next time, bye everybody.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of education leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today, you will hear another program in our special series recorded from home due to and about the COVID-19 crisis and how it is affecting educational programs in Southeast Wisconsin. Today, we have guests from Racine Unified School District and the mental health professionals with whom they contract for service to students and staff. We will be discussing special challenges faced by children, families, and teachers during the stay-at-home schooling we have all been experiencing since mid-March. That does seem like such a long time ago, but it was really just about 2 months, doesn't it? Sort of amazing. So our first guest is Leah Featherstone. She's a clinical psychologist and the director of professional services group. She's worked for over 15 years to strengthen kids and families throughout the state by providing quality mental health and substance use treatment. Hi, Leah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Next, we have Andrea Rickers, who works with Racine Unified School District, has for over 17 years, the last five in her current role as the Director of Student Services. During her tenure as director, the district has shown an increased focus and awareness of the incredible value of educating the whole child and increasing the focus of building strong SEL skills in our students and staff. Social emotional learning, that's what you're saying, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thanks, Andrea.
Thank you.
We have Julie Hiller, joined Racine Unified School District in 2017 as the manager of the Racine Collaborative for Children's Mental Health. She works collaboratively with community partners to assist with improving access and services for children in need of mental health care. Her main focus has been working in partnership with Racine Unified Schools to implement school-based and community-based mental health clinics and programming. So welcome. It's nice to see you and your homes. I don't know if any of you are fans of Rate My Skype Room on Twitter. They're all lovely. I'm just going to tell the guests that they have lovely rooms. Everybody's a different color, which is cool. So every time I make a call these days, I start by asking how everyone is, who you're sheltering with, and what's the work situation in your household. So if you don't mind sharing those, who would like to go first?
Well, I can start this. Currently, I am sheltering in place with my husband. We are empty nesters, and we are very honored and fortunate to both be working from home.
Yeah, it's a nice advantage when you can do that. That's for sure.
Absolutely. And I'm grateful for that.
Okay. And then Andrea?
Sure. I haven't really been working from home. I've been going into my office because I'm a much better worker at work than I am at home. However, I could stay home. I am home with my daughter and my boyfriend and his daughter, and he's working from home. So much as we love each other, it's really great for one of us to not be at home working. As it turns out, I'm told I'm pretty loud when I get on these, but we're making it work.
Okay, and Leah, what's your situation these days?
So I am very fortunate in that I get to work from home by myself most days. So my husband's work has remained essential through this, and he has needed to go into his office. And because both of us need to continue to work full time, my two boys have continued to go with my sister, who has provided their childcare since they were babies. So everybody's kind of still going their own separate ways, and then we're sheltering when we get home from work.
Right. So we're all trying to figure this out. And this is going to be about how you've been figuring this out for mental health care in RUSD. But I first wanted to ask, just kind of establish a baseline for our listeners. What sorts of mental health services were you providing before school closed, and where and how were you doing that?
Great question. This is Julie Hiller. And what we were providing is we had 5 school-based mental health clinics in our elementary schools, and then we had a community mental health clinic on our Northwestern Avenue campus. And so we were up and running, seeing kids face-to-face, providing individual group therapy, as well as Triple P parenting. And so we had a very robust system on a face-to-face system.
Wait, so Triple P parenting, give me a little bit on that.
That is evidence-based parenting that Children's Hospital does provide in our school-based sites.
Okay, so maybe we'll hear a little more about that as we go, because you're trying to do this in a different way.
Correct.
So when did you first have an idea that things might be changing, and how did you react back in March when the schools actually closed?
So I was thinking about that earlier, and I cried a little. I really, truly did. The idea of when it was 3 weeks, it didn't seem so terrible. And you know, it's 3 weeks, you can do anything for 3 weeks. And then by the following Monday, it was a lot longer. And that did not feel quite so doable. So we've just been really, I think, figuring it out every day since then. I think I cried a little, honestly, for just being away from our kids is hard.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's hard.
And from the mental health perspective, I think I felt just so burdened for our clients, and just not panicked, but just really motivated to try to figure out how we could continue to provide them services, and just feeling very burdened for them, because they just the loss of all of that structure and safety and security mm-hmm. and people, and really just trying as a company to pivot fast enough to not lose some of them, and to hang on to them as long as we could to make sure they were getting the services that they needed, even though they weren't going to school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, all of us who are involved in education in any way spend so much time sort of acclimating our students, whatever age, to what we're trying to do and get them into routines, which for most people is a really helpful thing. And whenever we disrupt those routines, there's bound to be some kind of fallout. So that's one of the things I'm sure you were thinking about. Did you anticipate at the time that there would be special concerns due to the stay-at-home order? Were you thinking, oh dear, how are we going to offer therapy and whatever?
So absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, as a district, I mean, I think that we are not a one-to-one school district. We do not have technology for every student. So we couldn't say, here, take your computer home and we'll just all start learning at home. We don't have that. And we know that many of our students, many of our families also don't necessarily have access to technology at home. They don't, even if they have something, they don't necessarily have wired service. They have cellular service, which is not quite as reliable, or maybe is a little slower. So no matter what we were going to do, we couldn't just do it. And that we knew there would be a gap in what service we could provide and when it would start. We moved pretty quickly to get some paper packets in place and things to keep kids busy. There was immediate concern about, okay, well, what are we going to do? How do we get to our kids? We can't go to their houses. We can't, all of the can'ts come into place, and then you have to figure out how to get around those.
Mm-hmm. So in what way, I mean, I feel like this situation has been difficult for everyone on some level. There are a few people who feel better at home. I would say that my sophomore in high school son is one of these people who's happy to be at home, but most people are not. And then if you already have mental health challenges, and you're moved into a new living and learning situation, maybe not particularly stable or without a lot of structure, what are some of the ways that those pre-existing mental health challenges can be affected by this?
I think the thing we've seen most significantly is that, and you're right, even people who don't have significant mental health concerns, their mental health has been challenged during this time, even the healthiest of people. So those people who already had existing mental health challenges, what we're finding is the coping resources and the skills that they had developed over time to manage all those mental health concerns, they no longer had access to, whether that's going to the gym or going to dinner with a friend or just being with your coworkers or going to get a manicure or any of the things that all of us use to help manage the stress of everyday life. Now, all of those things are gone. And so you either have to quickly find new ways to get that same coping strategy, or your mental health suffers significantly. And that's what we're starting to see, because the resources just aren't available. They can't access them like they could before.
So what are some new or potential mental health challenges which have concerned you?
I think that when you talk about like the impact of COVID-19 on, you know, just your mental health, you have to kind of think about what are we all kind of been experiencing. And you think about, this has really brought out a lot of worry in us. You know, we don't know a lot about this illness, and it's really hard to kind of get our hands wrapped around that on a daily basis. You know, you start to think about the impact of being quarantined and that emptiness, feeling lonely, not having those social connections. And so that has been extremely difficult. You also think about, you know, just anger and irritability. Think about the tremendous impact to families just on that side of job losses. I mean, this is historic unemployment that we have never seen in our lifetime. And again, how do you know that I'm going to have my job in 2 months, 3 months? You know, a lot of uncertainty. And you also think about kind of that urge, you know, when we talk about not having our normal coping skills, we sometimes rely on drugs and alcohol to do that for us then. And that is really an unhealthy mechanism. And I think that's a real concern out there. And I think also people feeling more depressed. And when you're isolated in your home and you're not in, and you think about that hopelessness and, you know, having some difficulty sleeping, changes in app, poor concentration, and I think motivation, you know, I can put that off till later, I don't have to do that now. And I think you brought up, Karen, to that point of that unstructured time. What does that mean, and how does that impact us? And I think when we start to put all of this together in a picture for ourselves, I think what we were using to cope with our mental health concerns when it was a 5 or, you know, 6, now is a 9 or 10, and those coping skills aren't working right now. And I think that ultimately kind of leads to concern. And Dr. Featherstone, just kind of from you, what are you seeing in the clinic side?
For me, the thing that keeps me up at night and really, really just makes me sad, and it's things that people don't generally want to talk about, I worry about the safety of our kids and our families. We know that domestic violence calls are up since COVID-19. We know that school personnel generally make about 20% of the access calls for child abuse and neglect. And we know that the stress level is higher just across the board. And so I really worry about the kids and families that are living in just unsafe environments, but they're not getting out to the people who generally help keep them safe. And so some of those kids and families are struggling. That's the thing that I worry about long term, is even as we start to come out of this, is really going to significantly impact our systems and our schools and our families and our mental health providers and just kind of our entire system.
Okay. I'm just going to do a quick reintroduction. You are listening to WGTD HD-FM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Racine Unified School District's mental health services during COVID-19 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So you told me earlier that before the schools closed for COVID-19, you offered mental health services in the schools, but you can't do that anymore. So how are you doing this?
Yeah, we had to very quickly pivot to a 100% telehealth platform. And so we have switched to providing both video and some telephone sessions for clients. We have continued to take new clients during this time to be able to, as those mental health concerns increase over the last 2 months, to be a place where they can continue to get services. So we have switched completely to telehealth. We're looking at over the next few weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, starting to very slowly and gradually move back to some potential in-person appointments. But for now, we are staying telehealth.
So what are some of the biggest challenges to offering the care remotely as opposed to, I guess you were doing it in schools, so you had like a private consultation room somewhere in the school?
Go ahead, Andrea.
Sorry, I was going to say, so Leah works with a professional services group who is one of our partners for providing mental health services to our students. Our school-based clinics, our partner is Children's of Wisconsin.
Okay.
So our school-based clinics were Children's, and I think that in general, they're finding a very similar situation. Mm-hmm. But okay. Our community clinic is where we partner with professional services groups. So it's in one of our buildings, but it's not what we would consider a school-based clinic. It's a community clinic.
Okay.
If that helps kind of clarify that. But I think that what Leah is going to discuss is identical, really, I would say, to what's been going on with Children's and the students in our school-based clinics.
Okay. So the question was, what are some of the biggest challenges to offering care remotely?
One of the biggest challenges, which Andrea already mentioned, is just access to technology. Sometimes it feels like a very privileged stance to say like, yes, we're just gonna move to technology, and understanding not everybody can do that or can't do that easily or without financial strain or that kind of thing. So getting to our kids and families that have, you know, smartphones or computers, have reliable Wi-Fi, everything like that, that has probably been the biggest barrier, which is, you know, why we're thankful the insurance companies and the systems have given us access to do phone contact. If that's all we can do, we're able to at least still touch base with them. Privacy is a little bit of a challenge at times because everybody is in the home, and if kids or adults need to talk about situations going on in the home, sometimes privacy is a problem. And just availability, because it's harder to keep track of everybody, because it seems like it should be easier because everybody's supposed to be in their homes, but it's sometimes harder to find people through this technology.
Right. I think many of us are used to thinking that everyone has a phone or a device, but in some families, they're all sharing one or two things. And everyone needs to.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. And I think the right now is, what if you're working from home and I need the computer to work from home? Right. And so now you've got even more of a stressor of how do we do this? So that has also been part of the issues that we have seen it also.
Yep.
Yeah, it's that's one of those things I feel like a lot of people don't really think about, because if you're lucky enough to have a smartphone, you're just used to having it to yourself and using it all the time. But most people aren't giving their 7-year-old a smartphone. Right. And so they're having to try to figure out where to put things and how to give them the access that they might need and learn all the apps that are involved, which is also a stressor if you're not that a computer savvy person. So are there any advantages at all to doing this as a telehealth situation instead of in person?
Absolutely, I think there are. Even though the challenge sometimes is technology, this avenue also increases access, because I no longer have to rely on someone to get to me in a clinic building. I can now get to them no matter where they are. And so we've seen a reduction in no-shows for appointments, And so being able to just reduce some of those barriers, whether that's travel or the parents can't get them there or financial problems, that kind of stuff. So it is, it on the flip side does increase access. We do have some clients that are thriving in with telehealth, that they are going deeper in therapy than they ever did in person. And you know, we could talk a lot about why that might be, but many, many people are doing much better in therapy through this telehealth platform. So we absolutely see some benefits in this platform.
And we talked a little bit about this already. Ooh, that was weird echo. But are there any new mental health challenges arising just due to isolation and uncertainty, or maybe fear of catching the virus or fear of losing a loved one or anything like that?
I think all of those things. I think isolation just breeds depression, and very often can make it difficult for people's mood to be kind of where we would want it to be. We certainly get concerned about suicidal ideation increasing because of the isolation and the lack of resources and supports and that kind of thing. Anxiety by definition is uncertainty and the lack of control. And so we all feel out of control or like we don't have any control during this situation. And so the level of depression and anxiety and substance use and suicidality and all of those things are something that we are paying very, very close attention to and that concern us moving forward.
And then you said that there were some people who do better in therapy under these circumstances. Are there some students maybe who didn't have mental health challenges, but maybe something like mild anxiety, and they like being at home and being under less stress and not having to rush around is actually a good thing, possibly also for parents, I would think.
I would say yes, there are some. There are some students who are doing really quite well in a virtual platform. And you know, we've talked about even what next year might look like. And because we don't know what's going to happen when in September, I find it hard to imagine that we're going to just walk in the doors of school like we always do. Mm-hmm. Something will be different. Whatever that looks like, we kind of don't know. And I think Leah alluded to, you know, the control, that mm-hmm. this is an uncontrollable situation. And no matter how much we just thrive on controlling things, this is an uncontrollable situation. It's we have no idea really what's going to happen. And every day is a little bit different. That I think certainly increases anxiety for people. So although being at home is a bit of a constant and maybe a good environment for some students, being at school is often the constant mm-hmm. and is the best environment for some other students. And so I think, yes, there are some students who are doing better in academically, doing great in a virtual platform because they don't have the interruptions maybe that school causes with a lot of other people around. And then there are others who are not doing nearly as well because they need the constant space of school to go to every day where there's some level of consistency to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Another reintroduction. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert. This is Education Matters, and we're discussing RUSD's mental health services during COVID-19. It'll be archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again there, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in the discussion there. So how do you think the experience of offering care at home will affect these services in the future?
That part remains a little bit unclear, just like just about everything else right now. You know, I through this whole thing have tried to find like little ways. I always say like hashtag silver lining, right? Of like, we have to find something that we're gonna like grab onto in this situation and think at least that was something that came out of this. One of those things is that telehealth is becoming much more widespread and insurance companies are starting to identify that this as a platform that needs to continue even after COVID-19. How exactly all of that is going to shake out is unclear at this point. but I do believe that there will be greater access to telehealth in the future, even after we come out of this kind of COVID thing. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the relationships that you have with families will change due to that?
Potentially. Again, everything has pros and cons. In some ways, our relationships with families have strengthened because we now have access to parents where maybe we were struggling to connect with them in the past because of work schedules or just life. And so in some regards, our relationships with our kids and our families have really strengthened during this time because we're partnering more with them and we're just have greater access to them. There are some families that don't do particularly well with this platform. And those are the ones that moving forward, we would recommend for more in person, that those services remain in person. Usually the way telehealth is supposed to work is there is a group of people that it's appropriate for and you move them into that. And then there is a group of people that it probably shouldn't be their first choice. And those we would continue to offer in-person appointments moving forward.
And you said that now you're able to incorporate parents sometimes. So I assume, sometimes the students, the children would be dropped off and parents would have to go on to work or wherever else they needed to be. And since some of them might have more flexible schedules, not everyone, but some might, you're able to work with them through the phone or computer at home. Are there any privacy issues there? So, parents can log on, but should they log on with their kids? Some of the students might have issues that they want to talk about that they don't want their parents to hear.
Yep, and that's something that we pay really close attention to, and it is a significant barrier for some of our kids and families. Often that the first step of that is for the therapist to have a very frank conversation with the parent to say, I need you to butt out. I need you to go somewhere else. It, depending on the age of the kid, we will say, can you go outside on your porch? Can you go in your bedroom? Is there a place that you are safe to talk? For those households where that just can't happen safely, there's not a lot of intensive therapy happening necessarily. We're in more of a supportive role, checking in, kind of trying to maintain them, but not doing significant work that might be unsafe for them given the environment that they're in due to privacy concerns or any other thing like that.
Okay. So do you offer, and this would have been pre-COVID, but it could be now too, preventive services, maybe some training for teachers to work with students or for teachers to recognize if there are some problems that their students are having that they can only notice through their computer meetings with the kids as opposed to when they see them every day? What are some of the things that you've encountered around that?
Less so now. I think a lot of what's happening now is a little more reactive because we had to respond to this change in situation. In general, yes, a lot of preventive. We certainly do offer training to our staff. We implement mindfulness practices so that we can, and which have been really well received. It just began this year to kind of get people to understand that they are, and children and adults, that they are kind of in control of their brain. They can control that a little bit and they can bring themselves into a place where they can manage the emotion that they're feeling. So some of that, we certainly, we do teach social emotional learning skills. We try to build community in our schools so that our kids feel safe in the place that they're in. They build a relationship with a trusted adult so that someone they are comfortable going to should they have a need. We do, like I said, much training. We've been working with Professional Services Group for a few years now on trauma-sensitive schools implementation. So really kind of recognizing and understanding what someone who is experiencing or has experienced significant trauma and how to respond to that and what behaviors they might portray and how to respond to those behaviors. Right now, we are trying to get information out to teachers. It's a little bit more difficult because everything is via email or a virtual platform. And there are, we have 3,000 staff members. You can't just all get on a Zoom meeting and learn mm-hmm. something. So it's, finding the right methodology right now. But yes, we do.
Okay. Are there any surprises or rewards that you think have come from this change to online mental health delivery?
I think some of the ones we've talked about before, I think for some kids, we've given them space and maybe a greater sense of safety that they really have started working and digging deeper in therapy. That surprised me. When we started this, we kind of had a meeting with therapists and said, listen, don't expect to make leaps and bounds during this time therapeutically because people are going to be so stressed and there's so much going on. And that's true for some people, but what we've really found is the opposite for others, and they're doing better in therapy than they ever have. I think this forced us into technology, where that's always people's plan, is to have use technology and integrate it and all that stuff. And I think everybody kind of had it on the forefront or on the fringes, and this really like forced us right in. And now we know we can use technology for just about everything, which creates it opens a lot of doors and reduces a lot of barriers. And the other one I would say is access to parents. I think that has been wonderful for our therapists and for our kiddos, for the kids we were seeing maybe during the school day, or we're having a really significant problem getting a hold of parents. Now we really are better able to partner with parents and help them to say, let's figure out what can you do in the home to help with these behaviors or help with their depression or help with their anxiety. And so it's a much more collaborative approach for kids and their mental health, because parents are so much more involved because they're there and we can get to them more easily.
So I hadn't raised this question ahead of time, but I think it might be an interesting one. Have you offered any sort of mental health services or just sort of some tips on maintaining health to your teachers? Because this has been very stressful for them, obviously, especially if they have little children of their own at home.
Yes. Yes, we have. Actually, we started before this, or during the school year before the closure, and have continued with compassion resilience. Mm-hmm. So what used to be maybe considered compassion fatigue, but compassion fatigue is kind of sounds like, well, you're really tired, we're really sorry, it's no wonder this is hard, and we're done. And compassion resilience is, you're really tired because this is hard. Here's how you can take care of yourself and help yourself and kind of fight back against that, right? A little bit of self-care. So we've continued with that, and we'll be continuing with that. We are requiring our staffs to do some professional learning of their own while they're out. And so I think many of them have, they having some choice in what it is that they opt to learn. Many of our schools are doing larger scale book studies and things like that. So they're having some interaction that way. I think those are all positive things. We're a Google district, so using the Google platform for video conferencing for work is great, but we can use it to just hang out with each other too, you know, and that feels pretty good. When you can't be together, you can be together apart, you know. Mm-hmm. But we also are continuing this partnership with PSG, Professional Services Group, and we'll be sending the communication out probably tomorrow. So you're in the forefront here, that we are opening up, I think, 4 different drop-in sessions throughout the course of the week, 3-4 teachers and EAs and whatnot, and 1 for our administrators, because, you know, they're suffering too. They're supposed to run their whole school or be running the district and also have children at home and teachers to worry about and students to worry about. So we have to think about them too. So to offer kind of drop-in sessions for them to come in and work with one of our clinicians or one of the clinicians from PSG it's not really therapy. It's not group therapy, but it's an opportunity to talk to each other, talk to your colleagues and your peers about how you're feeling, and other people are feeling the same way, and not maybe feel so alone about how you are concerned or how you're stressed or how you're, you know, having those reactions or responses to this particular situation. So that's coming out soon too. And really just trying to make sure that they understand, like, yes, there are things to get done, but we're all in this together and need to support one another in it.
Excellent. So we are right on the edge of running out of time. So I would thought I would all give all three of you a last word here about the community resources that anyone listening might be able to access to learn more about how to manage their mental health concerns, both now in this sort of unprecedented time, but also just later on in general.
Great, Karen, for giving me this opportunity, because I always like to leave next and working more information. So we do have a in Racine County, and it's a sponsorship between Racine County Human Services and a grant that we received to improve the behavioral health of the community. And it's called the Racine County Family Resource, and it's located at www.racinecountyfamilyresource.com. This is a one-stop shop for all of your mental health and addiction care needs here in Racine. So if you're in, even if you're looking for other services, all of our community services are located on one website. In the past, people complained, like, I don't know where to find that. So please try it, go to it. It provides a community directory of behavioral health and mental health providers. There's advocacy tools, and there's a library on there with 30,000 articles about health.
Wow.
It's mental health, but physical health. And so it's all evidence-based. So the information is relevant and up to date. You can also have a personal folder and save information from the website in your personal folder, so you can go back and reference it and look at it. And you can also create daily wellness plans, which would be really, really.
Oops, you froze up a little bit. I will put that link into the on the Facebook post that I'm going to put up after we're done here. And either of the other two of you have anything to add?
Yeah, PSG continues to offer mental health and substance use therapy. We also provide medication management, which I know can sometimes be a tricky thing to access. I think the one thing I always want to clarify, because we value our partnership with Racine Unified, but just because we partner with Racine Unified does not mean our community clinic only serves kids. Sometimes people get a little bit confused about that we are a community clinic. Mm-hmm. And so we serve anyone in the community of Racine County. And so it does not have to be just children who attend a Racine Unified school. And so I just want to clarify that. We continue to provide mental health services both there and in communities kind of around Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, that kind of thing. But we are passionate about providing good quality care to kids and families. And we hope that we can continue to do that throughout this COVID-19 pandemic.
Great.
Thank you for clarifying that, Leah, because it is absolutely the truth. And we want that. We want all of our families in this community to receive the service that they need. We also, I would say, certainly to the district's website at rusd.org, there is a coronavirus update. First thing you see when you open up the district's webpage, click on that, and it opens up another page to multiple different resources that we're trying to make sure are somewhere available and visible to our families. And so many of them are there, some of the community resources, well, as many of them as we can think of or know about, as well as even academic and social emotional learning resources as well.
Great. Well, that kind of flew by. I don't know if that felt that way to
it really
you
did.
All, but I want to thank my guests. Leah Featherstone is a clinical psychologist and the director of professional services group, which partners with Racine Unified to offer mental health services. Andrea Rickers is the Racine Unified School District's director of student services. And Julie Hiller is Racine Unified's manager of Racine Collaborative for Children's Mental Health. You have been listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Racine Unified School District's mental health services during COVID-19 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join a discussion there. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. This is WGTDHD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenaya Quinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Lenaya Quinta for Community Matters. Our topic today is Pleasant Prairie Through the Eyes of Mike Serpy. This morning, Mike will reflect on his long service on the Township and Village Boards of Pleasant Prairie. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Len.
Mike, Pleasant Prairie really has a long history. It was the home of Native Americans, particularly along the shoreline of Lake Michigan. The Europeans arrived in 1833, established the first town government in 1842, actually even before your involvement, believe it or not. And it's really great to have you with us this morning. We're the same age. We've seen some crazy, amazing transformations here in southeastern Wisconsin. Even before you began your 31-year career of public service as a Pleasant Prairie Village trustee, you were still giving your time to governance for the then town. You served on the Town Park Commission and then the Police and Fire Commission. So I have to ask, what drove you to seek public office back in 1989 when Pleasant Prairie changed from a town to a village? Weren't you getting enough aggravation just being involved with law enforcement oversight?
Well, there was a certain amount of aggravation with law enforcement, but it was a rewarding career, which I loved. When I first